Four RCs are involved in bakery. Rabbi Rakov will be giving a special shiur on what's called the OU Hafrushas Challah system. That's going to be, I think, next Friday, I'm not sure, wherever it's on the schedule. And Rabbi Bendelstein and Rabbi Peretsky, who's the head of the baking department, Rabbi Peretsky, will be giving specific topics in baking. The Rabbi Bendelstein is the baking industry part one.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Grossman. Shalom Aleichem. And as Rabbi Grossman, Shlita has stated, my session has been dubbed the baking industry part one. You will hear from some very, very distinguished Rabbanim when it comes to the bakery industry. It happens to be a very fascinating industry, both in terms of kashrus, both in terms of technology, especially when you deal on the commercial level. And I know in part two, they will deal with more of the specifics, especially as far as Pas Yisroel is concerned. Rabbi Rakov will talk about the Hafrushas Challah system. And Baruch Hashem, there's what to talk about. I don't know if we have enough sessions really to cover bakeries. But what I'm going to try to focus on is perhaps the peculiarities and the unique experiences you have when it comes to baking as it pertains to kashrus. And you only learn this when you're in the field. As much as you study Yeredeya and learn the halachas, the shach and the tas, and mechaber, and the ramah, there's only such that you can take in from the learning, but you really have to be out there, get your feet wet in the field, to understand that there are shilas that come up constantly. And permit me to even introduce this session with the Dvar Torah. I had seen something which is very, very interesting, fascinating, from a sefer called Menachem Zion, Rav Menachem Zaks, sefer on Pirkei Avos, and he was Chosno Shel Harav Svi Pesach Frank, Zecharei Levracha, one of the chief rabbis of Eretz Yisrael. And he writes, Aseh Lecha Rav Histalik Min HaSafek. Make for yourself a Rav, get for yourself a Rav, and keep far removed from Safek. And he says, Grad, in this week's Parsha, Parsha's Ekev, we have a mocker for this. Because so we read in the Parsha, second Parsha of Kriyashma, it says, Hishamru Lachem Pen Yifte Levavchem. Visartem Min Aderech. So, Pashup Shad is, Hishamru Lachem, be careful, don't go astray. And don't do things that were which is connected to Torah. And of course, that will result in a hester upon him. But rather, stay on the derech. Be shomri Torah mitzvahs, and a Kodesh Baruch will watch over you. But the Rav Zaks is an incredible gevaldiga of perish. He says, Hishamru Lachem, be careful, pen. Be careful of the pen, of the maybes. Be careful of having maybes in your life. And this pertains not only to the baking industry, but to all of kashrus in general. Be careful of sveikos. And what do you do with the suffix? Because if you have too many of those sveikos, what's going to happen? Visartim min aderech. You won't know what to do. And you may do the wrong thing. Hopefully it'll be the right thing. But you'll have that in your mind. You won't know what to do. So the mission of us goes along. It says, Aseh lecha rav histalik min hasafek. How do you keep away from the pen? How do you keep away from those sveikos in your life? It says, by Aseh Lecha Rav. When you have someone to approach who's a bar hachi, who knows, who has the material on their fingertips, you're going to stay away from that pen, from those sveikos. You won't have those doubts in your mind. Because you know you'll have the confidence to be tough on the faith that if I have a shaila, I can go to my Rav to ask him and he'll know what to do. Baruch Hashem. Here we have poskim, which are Gedolei Torah. And I, personally, I'm flabbergasted that I can go ahead and I could see something in the industry which I'm not too sure about, and there are things I come across that I'm not sure about. But I know we have the foundations here to go ahead and ask the Shaila, and we get answers. And we get answers because Baruch Hashem, they're familiar in all phases of the Yeredeya, of the industry, and they're able to apply the proper seifim to the issues at hand. And so what I'm going to do right now, and even though you'll hear later on from very distinguished Rabbanim on the Hafrushas Challah system, the Pas Yisroel systems, more in-depth detail into Milchig breads, and so on and so on. I'm going to discuss some things which are unusual, things that I've come across through my experiences. And to know when to ask the Shaila, which is an important thing. I don't know if you always learn that in your day in the Shulchan Aruch, but know when you have a suffix. Know when you have the suffix to begin with and what to ask. I myself am a solution-oriented person. I don't like to hear somebody ask, you have a problem here, we have a problem there. There are some things which are insoluble. I'm not saying that everything has a solution. But those things that are insoluble are very, very few and far between. 99% of the time, there's a solution. So I like to hear of the solution. We have problems, so we know what to do. We have to ask the Shaila. But we have to find the solutions. And that's what we do when we work with our companies, not only in baking, but in all of kashrus, we try to make it as pashut and simple as possible. That these are the solutions, and this is what has to be done. And if you do it in a very, really ruffle bitcha katana, you take them along the way, and they tell them, you guide them along, and you tell them exactly what has to be done, says they're going to follow. They're going to follow. So Baruch Hashem, let me give you some of the examples I have of some of the sfeikos and the shilas that I've come across in the baking, which I feel are somewhat unusual, and you won't learn about it in the yeshiva. I go to a company, okay, to make my review. And we all learned in Yoredeya that there's one heter beheter that can become usher, basa b'chalav. We have a whole thing in basa b'chalav. I learned that there's another heter beheter that can become usher. When I went to do a review of a certain plant, this plant was making biscuits. They were making Danish pastries, and there was one prune Danish pastry. What I do is when I go to the land, we have actually discussed with you what Schedule A is. Okay, which is our list of approved ingredients. Every company has to apply with this for these ingredients. We have to have records of all the ingredients of all our plants that they are using. They cannot use anything which is off of that list, which they're quite familiar with. So they know the protocol, they know the rules, they know what to follow. So I go ahead, I make reviews, and we have Mashkikim going in there regularly. I go for a review periodically. And I try to make the review as thorough as possible. I spend a few hours, and I go through all the what they call batch formulas, which the batcher or the mixer uses to mix all the ingredients to put in. And it's not exactly what you see on your ingredient panels. We'll probably talk about what ingredient panels are. But these are exactly what they're using. So I'm going down the list, and I see in one particular prune Danish formula, they have included raisin juice. Well, okay, raisin juice. There's kosher raisin juice. Not too much kosher raisin juice concentrate on the market, but there's kosher raisin juice. I'm looking at the Schedule A's. I say, do we have raisin juice on the Schedule A? And sure enough, I'm looking at the schedule. I can't find the raisin juice on our Schedule A, but perhaps they had ordered it. It was on order, and they were about to use it, and maybe they even applied for it. They got a kosher certificate for it. So I asked them, where's this raisin juice? So they tell me, we don't have any raisin juice that we use, but it's on batch formula. So how could that be? So he says, Rabbi, well, what we're doing here is we take our raisins. The raisins is on our Schedule H. Yeah, raisins is there. And we take water. Water is water. And we soak the raisins in the water. Okay, we're soaking the raisins in the water. So all of a sudden, it occurs to me, you got to know when to ask, when to have a suffix. How long do you soak the raisins in the water? About 48 hours. And the raisins are being soaked in the water for 48 hours, about 2 days. And what this does is, it gives a texture to the pastry dough. It actually adds a little bit of sweetness to the dough. Because this particular dough had no sugar, fructose, or any other sugar substitutes. These are all professionals. They have their QA, the quality assurance people, chemists that are looking into it, so they want it to be a certain way. And it occurs to me, he says, wait a minute, you're right, the raisins are kosher and the water is kosher, but I had to explain to them, we got a special category of kosher, which they may not have been sensitive to before, which is called wine. And wine needs special kosher certification. And what constitutes wine? Well, there are different types of opinions here. I told them, the raisin being soaked in the water may fall into, as far as kosher is concerned, may not as fall, not as far as the FDA is concerned, but may fall into the wine category. And therefore, we may need some sort of kosher, a special kosher certification when it comes to you're making the raisin water. I told him I'd get back to them, and sure enough, I asked Rav Belsky Shlita about if there's a problem with Stam Yayin, with these raisins being soaked in the water for this duration of time. And sure enough, Rav Belsky told me, he says, Rada, there's a shaila here. So they put the product on hold. They were more than willing. They'll work with you. And they were so conscientious. A very good company, and they reformulated the product. They took out the raisin one, and they added a little bit more molasses or honey to give a little bit of the sweetness. But we got it. The thing is, you have a suffix. But when do you have the suffix? Sometimes it doesn't occur to you. Both are kosher ingredients. The meat is kosher, the basar is stolov, and the chalav is kosher. But when you put them together, here we got another. We had another heter beheter, so to speak. They were both on the Schedule A. The raisins was there, and the water was there. Okay, but we spotted it, Baruch Hashem. And this is one of those peculiar. When you have to ask the shaila, when you get an answer, and to deal with the company, and to be able to forge some sort of relationship, so that we'll be able to work out and have a solution to the problem. Another instance is I get a company, and I thought we actually had that applies to me for making a roll. And they're making what they call a low-carb roll. Low carbs. What means low carbs? Okay. Low carbs is that they're going to take out the carbohydrates from their flour. So what they use is, I'm looking at the list here. So you got to make the rolls. You have your dough conditioners, okay, and you have your and you have your improvers, okay, and sometimes and some oil, but I don't see flour now. And between me and you and the baking, you can't do anything without flour. Even though we'll talk about meringue cookies later on, meringues don't have any flour whatsoever, and they are mamash shakol. Good meringue cookies are shakol in the abidvaro. But for the most part, I'm looking at, this is a roll. I thought maybe we have a charcoal roll here. But one of the ingredients was gluten. Okay. Now gluten, what the gluten is actually the flour. Okay, but they take out the carbohydrates, the starch out of the flour, and they only leave it with the protein. So it's the protein end of your wheat. That's what the gluten is. And also what it does is the gluten makes the roll of bread rise. So I thought, is gluten enough to constant? And believe it or not, people were calling with shilas, to what bracha do you make on this roll? People who are buying this product, these low carb rolls, were calling, is this a hamotzi? They want to know if it was a mezonah roll. And I don't know if we've told you our position. We don't espouse mezonah rolls. Our position is that all the OU's psak is that once you kovei a suda, the roll, okay, everything's hamotzi. So we wash for everything. There's no such thing as mezonah rolls. But I thought maybe we may even have a charcoal here. So sure enough, I asked the shaila to Rav Belsky, and he asked me, what's the proportion? They have flaxseed going on here, flaxseed. What's the proportion of the gluten in this product? So it was pretty much like 48%, which they had another 30% with the flaxseed and with the oil.
Was it 48% gluten?
Gluten. So the gluten was certainly a main ingredient. It was a main ingredient. So the question was, though, what is this? Is this a hamotzi or isn't it a hamotzi? And we brought in the roll. Mamish Rav Belsky was towing. Well, he took the gluten, spit it out. Okay, he says hamotzi. Certainly hamotzi left him in a aretz. And that's the way, that was our psak halacha. But the thing is, when you get something across yourself, something looks to you, if you just pass it by, you think it says rolls on it, you think hamotzi. But that's what, when it comes across, to look at things carefully, to give it a good eye, know when there's a suffix.
Is that part of the mishkiach job?
What's that?
Is that part of the mishkiach job?
The mishkiach job.
Whether it's a broken thing.
That would be part of the mashiach, and to know, you know, if you have a question, you know, keep your eyes alert. I gotta tell you, I've seen mashkichim to meet them that are not as good as a yotzei v'nichnas. Now most of our companies are yotzei v'nichnas, you know, they come in yotzei v'nichnas intermittently. I've seen caterers where there's a Mashiach Tamidi that's not as good, I would trust more the Yotzei V'Nichlas than the Mashiach Tamidi. So much so, I've seen lockers that have been sealed with simanim, locks from a walk-in cooler. This mamish I saw with my own eyes. And a worker, a Goyish worker, going in and taking a screwdriver and opening the latch, even though it was padlocked. So, I mean, this is mamish under Hashgacha Tamidis even. Okay, so these are the things that you got to be careful of, even to know, you know, how to set up the system and not to also be too overbearing upon the people that you're working with, because sometimes when you're too overbearing, they try to undermine you. It's mamish when you forge the relationship, you're good to them, you work with them, and they see that you're out for them, so then, you know, things work together pretty much hand in hand. Another instance which comes to mind is somewhat unusual. Company applies what they call a bagel dog. This was an interesting item. So what was the bagel dog? Now, we don't certify anything which is milchig bread. But they said that they had this bagel. They're baking, and they're going to put cream cheese inside and bake together the cream cheese with the bagel. So offhand, we were going to reject this item. We could not approve it. Because this is going to be melted bread. But I told them, you know, to send in the item, perhaps we could take a look at it, see what's the story. He sends it in. It's mamish like a hoagie, like a big, it's more than a bagel. It's like one of those hoagies, long a French bread, okay? With, but they call it a bagel dog. I don't know what they call it, a bagel dog. It was like a French bread, small baguette bread, French baguette, with cream cheese, and the cream cheese was oozing out. You can't miss the cream cheese. Anyone who saw the product saw the cream cheese coming out from the sides. I brought it into Rav Belsky, Shlita, and he says, you can certify this. This is nicker. Okay, so the idea that you can't certify the bread if it's not nicker. This is certainly nicker from all ends, okay? And therefore, it was certifiable, and we could certify it.
Do you have to be concerned that they may reformulate it?
That won't be done. This is something now Mashgiach would have to check up on, the one who goes to the plant. But for practical purposes, that's something that they would let us know also. Because if there's anything that has to do, if the product is reconfigurated or done in a different way, this usually, or they know that they have to communicate that information with our office. Another interesting question arose, which is actually a local neighborhood bakery. This was that when I was out in the field, I had noticed in a particular bakery, actually not in the New York area, that for Chanukah, everyone was trying to get into the Sofganiyos, jelly donuts. And this particular bakery, now the process for making donuts is you take the dough and you fry the dough. The donuts are with fried dough. This particular bakery didn't have a fryer, so they couldn't fry. So what they did was, in order to fill the orders for the Chanukah yantif, what they did was they took these dinner rolls, okay? They glazed them with confectioner's sugar and pumped inside the roll jelly. So he says this was incredible. So now they have, people are buying now these sofganiyos, but in fact it was really bread filled with jelly. What bracha do you make on this? So this is some of the things that you don't find in the Shulchan Aruch, but what do you do? Okay? What's that?
Like a regular sandwich, no?
It's mamish a regular sandwich. So the bracha here for this donut was really hamotzi. You're making a mozi on the donut because it's really bread. It's not a donut. It's not cake. It's not pastry. Now there is an inyan of pasa barbekisin, which we can allude to a little bit later on. But that's it. That's if it's made mitchila like that. But this was bread, which is meant for bread for a seuda. It's certainly bread. It's not pastry. So it would qualify more like hamotzi than mizonos. Another instance, which is another unusual instance, is a company applies, they're getting what they call, they're going to make...
So what was the end of the Maskana?
That's Mamish HaMotzi.
Right, I'm saying, but did the bakery stop producing, or did they just made that a sign? That
we made a sign to alert the community that these donuts coming from this place are HaMotzi Lechem and Arish. You have to wash them.
To hang up the sign in the store?
What's that?
They require them to hang up the sign.
And we, I don't know if they have the sign on the store, but I think this was a smaller neighborhood. They knew about the store, so everyone knew the community knew that anyone who's going to this store to buy would make HaMotzi on these pseudo donuts. They aren't real donuts, really bread that's disguised as a donut. Another instance is a company applies for what they call a snack toast. So what are they doing with this snack toast? So they're taking from another company. We had different companies. Some companies work together. One company orders from another company. They take a bread base, and they use this bread base to make this snack toast. And in this snack toast, there were milchic flavors, other milchic things. So the question was, maybe this qualifies for milchic bread. You're going to get more of milchic bread later in I think either part two, maybe Rabbi Rakov may discuss it with you. But this was something which of a novelty. So I'm looking.
It was a bread toast.
It was what they call it a snack toast. Okay, but they were using a bread base to make this snack toast. Now there's a whole shot of whether we can certify not only milchic bread but even bread mixes and bread bases. Our policy here, what's the bread mix? A bread mix, okay, has the flour, and they'll put in the conditioners in. It's your mix. It's a bread mix. All you have to do is just add water and bake it off. That's a bread mix. Okay? And you'll get a bread. So some companies, what they do is, they call these premixes also. What you do is, once you add the water, companies themselves, they don't like to bake from scratch. Or if you go to a supermarket, you go to your Pathmark or your ShopRite, you have your bakery counters. What they will do is they will order from a company. They don't take the flour together and the sugar together and the yeast together to put it all together. That takes a lot of time. They can't do all that. So they make it easier for themselves. But you don't see it from the outside. You think they do it all from scratch? I mean, in Williamsburg and in Borough Park, they do it all from scratch. But in these places, the main thing is get the product out as quickly as you can. So they take what they call premixes or bread mixes. It could be even a cake mix, which is premixed, which has all the ingredients that they need, and they add a little water or maybe some other minor ingredients to it, and then they put it into the pan. I show you different types of ovens and different types of pans that that the bakeries use, and they put them in the oven and they bake them off. It's not done from scratch. It's not. No, it's a powder. It's a powder. It's mamish. A bread mix is a powder, so it's a powder. The question is, can we certify even a bread mix as that's milchigs? Because eventually what's going to happen to the bread mix? They're going to use it to make bread. Okay, so if it has milchig ingredients, maybe that too can't be certified and falls under the... So,
this bracha is not hamotzi l'chayr. It's not meant to be eaten as bread. It's meant to be as a snack or something like that.
Well, we're going to see about this particular case, but bread mixes in general are considered to be considered hamotzi because they will turn into a bread.
I mean, in this particular case,
we're going to see. Okay, so very good. So what we have over here is generally our policy is even to not to certify milchigs as bread bases. And bread mixes, we don't certify them as milk because we know eventually it's going to lead into turning into a bread. However, in this particular instance, they were telling me that they were taking the bread, this bread base, so to speak, and they were adding flour. The bread base itself had no flour, but it was applied to us as quote unquote a bread base. It was called a bread base, and once it's called the bread base, the chashash is it's going to be used. It can be used to make bread, okay? So if it has milchic ingredients, we won't certify even a bread base with milchic ingredients. But this company was telling me that even the snack is not going to be used to make bread. It's going to be used what they call to make a snack toast, okay? So the bread base had no milchic ingredients in it, okay? It had no milchic, and so what they're going to do, they're going to add their own milchic ingredients to it. So the question is, flour and maybe some, even some whey and some milk powder. And they were going to add some sugar to make it very sweet. And it wasn't going to be a bread at all. It was going to be a snack. So the way we resolve this is, we can't have in our system a bread base as certified as Milton's. So I had them change the name from bread base to snack base. So this way, it was really the same thing, but it was not going to be used for bread. You knew it was going to be used for more of a snack. And as a snack, like you're saying, it doesn't fall into the category. But you see, even like there's like a Maris Ayin to have a suffix to when something we call the bread, something we call a snack, to get that clarification. And once they were so happy and elated that they got the news that here we got a product, okay, which we were interested in, and we were able to certify it, because just the shame itself, the name, made all the difference. From calling it a bread, instead we're calling it a snack. These svekos that we have in the industry, I get companies apply, you know, we want to make Rabbi a chocolate chip bagel. Now, everything's kosher. Now, we don't certify, as we said, mostly bread. So I'm looking into the ingredients. Even everything's parv. Nothing wrong with any of the ingredients. But I do know that this same place that's making these bagels are also making chocolate chip cookies. You can have sometimes companies that make bagels, they can make cookies, they can make pastries. What could be wrong with this product? Okay, all the ingredients are parv, so why can't we certify it? Well, on the other side of the room, the chocolate chip cookies are using chocolate chips that are milchiks. And there's a whole sif in Yeridei and Kuf Yud Ches that talks maybe the guy may be machlif, one ingredient for the other. Let's say they don't have the parv chocolate chips available. How are we going to account for the fact that they'll take from the milk again, from where they're using to make the cookies, and they'll use it for the parv bagels? How are we supposed to know for sure? There's no way of telling, or no way of really monitoring that. So our policy is, we call this compatibility. Okay, when we have ingredients that are compatible with one another, okay, a parv and a milchik ingredient, if they want to use the same ingredient that they use for a milchik production, for a parv production, well, what do you mean the same? One's milchik and one's parv. You could have parv bittersweet chocolate chips, which are parv, and milk chocolate chips, which are milchiks. Okay? They're not exactly the same ingredient, but you can use them interchangeably. There's always a chashash, there's always a concern. We will not certify a parv product if there is milchiks of that same ingredient in the implant. This goes for a lot of different types of compatible products, compatible ingredients as well. You could have shortenings which are compatible. One could be treif, animal vegetable shortening, and two different ends of the plants. We would say that all the shortening in the plant, if you're using any shortening in any product, even for things which are not certified or not kosher, you have to get rid of all your treif shortening and only bring in kosher shortening. This has to be reviewed and gleaned through. So even a product, even you know, they send you that this is the ingredient we're using, still, if there's a chashash, there's an ingredient someplace else which resembles any of these ingredients in these products, when it comes to baking, this is the issues of compatibility are very strong when it comes to baking.
Why is that any different than, for example, in the same plant, one side is tarfis and one side is not, as opposed to a bakery when you have bread, one side is milk, and one side is not?
Okay, well, even when there's two sides of the plant with tarfis, is not, even the tarfis end of the plant can't have any ingredients which may be used in the kosher ingredients, in the kosher products. We will get rid of all the what we call compatible ingredients, so the shortenings, glycerin, if there's any treif glycerin which you're using for both kosher end, we will get rid of all, even on their treif end, they would only have to use kosher glycerin, kosher shortening, kosher oils, to get rid of all the issues of compatibility. Otherwise, we need a mashgiach tamidi in the plant to monitor. Now, but that's always expensive for the company, and no company's willing to pay there are companies that pay for mashgiachim tamidim to be there around the clock to watch, make sure that only the kosher is going into the right products. But there's no way for us to monitor and to see for sure unless we get rid of all the compatible ingredients which can be used from one end to the next.
What about parver bread and milk cookies?
The same.
You're not sure that the whey will be put into the bread.
That's right. No, we're not, because these are part. They're not going to. It can, okay, but that's only if it's. But there, you see that a company crossed the line has particularly parv bread. They're only doing parv bread. They have no what they call, and they would have to claim that also on their labels, okay, that the whey or the milk powder is contained within. Yes. It's pretty much, yes, it is held universally with all the hashgachas. Tomato sauces can be compatible. You can have tomato. There are a lot of compatible ingredients. And not only for ingredients, but also for kalim, you have compatible. Now, you go to your yeshivas, your shuls, okay, your hospitals. You go back in the kitchen there. These are institutional kitchens, nursing homes, okay? You'll see what they call rolling racks. Have you seen the rolling racks? And trays or sheet pans that they put on the racks. Now, you can have sheet pans. The same sheet pans can be used to bake a pizza, and you can use it to bake a chicken. Okay? Now, in a good institution, okay, now it's in Machaber and the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah Beferish writes, you have to have separate salt shakers, and we'll mark them accordingly. Okay, so, and our flake sheets and our milchigs, different patterns on our silverware. But this is not only for the home, this is for your institutions as well. Things in institutions have to be marked. One, you have to know what's going to be used for pizza. Sometimes they paint it with a high heat paint, which can absorb a lot of heat in the oven. Sometimes the milk is blue, the fleishigs is red, and so on and so forth. But as much painting as you want to do for institutions, it's not going to work commercially. I can tell you that much. Because a worker in a factory, okay, that's like doing parv and milchigs. Okay? Doesn't matter to him if he uses a blue pan or a red pan. It's not going to matter. So we have to safeguard this. We have to add a little bit more precautions than just doing some paint, like you do in your yeshivas and in the shuls, in the shul kitchens. We got to do more than that. And you got to be careful with sheet pans because sometimes they get orders. Orders go out from bakeries and they take the pans out with them. And where do they bring them to? They bring them to the store to unload. So what happens? Or they're bringing it to the yeshiva to unload, or they're bringing it to the shul to unload, and the shul's giving them back other sheet pans in place of the sheet pans that they got from the bakery. So they're getting all the. So you have to be really careful, and especially when it comes to sheet pans, to monitor these. If you haven't seen a picture of a sheet pan, let me show you. I did put down some pictures here. These are sheet pans on the second page. And you have different widths. Sometimes you have half, what they call half sheets, and full sheets. A full sheet pan. Sometimes you have double rack ovens and single rack ovens. The racks, they have these tall racks with shelves. Those are the rack ovens. And Mamish, what they have rack ovens, you could wheel in the whole shelf, the whole rack with all these pans into the oven, and it'll rotate around in the bake. There are different types of, there are revolving ovens. This is a rack oven. These are called
the
rack
new
ovens.
The newer ovens.
The newer ovens. A lot of bakeries are using this. The ones that are full size usually will use what they call tunnel ovens, which are long ovens, about 200 feet long, with different zones in them. But this is a very popular oven, which is being used, rack ovens, and they can get a lot done this way. You fill up the rack with all these sheets. About 30 sheets can fit. Sheet pans can fit on a rack. Roll it in the oven, okay? Lots of product come out that way. So it's very efficient and very economical as well. You got to be careful that these pans, when it comes commercially, are not compatible, okay? We have to mark sure that our kalim are not compatible. Now, what do I mean by that? Now, if I know that they're baking breads or baguettes, okay, and they're baking cookies, now, they're certainly not going to bake a cookie on a pan that's on the next page. These are what they call flute pans or baguette pans. What they do is they take the dough, and the dough is shaped like the pan. Now, a cookie is not going to be baked on these pans. Now, a milchig cookie, I'm not afraid that they're going to use these pans, which are designated for breads as parv, to be used for cookies, which are milchigs. Because these are totally what we call incompatible. So what we do is when we strive, just like we strive for incompatibility when it comes to ingredients, we strive to make incompatibility commercially, not just with paint, to paint it, but but also that the kalim themselves should be not compatible with one another, so that we'll be ensured that they're only using this for the proper productions.
So when you walk into an existing company, you'll actually have them get rid of their kalim?
We won't ask them to get rid of it. What we will do is we will work out a system so that they can use the kalim that they have in already for products that we're comfortable with, or we'll certify them totally as milfics, or we won't certify the breads. Okay? In other words, if they insist that they have to use these pans for breads, we will not certify the breads.
And right. Do you have special guidelines? I know that this is a digression, but for a nursing home, for something else, you have those guidelines for those commercial?
Now, there are the distinguished rabbanim in our office that deal with what they call food service, okay? And we do have guidelines on how to deal with the food service when it comes to these issues.
Inflation.
With the milk inflation, so on and so forth. That's right. Let me just... do I have any more time? Or
45 seconds.
45, okay. I can't give you a whole share. I did have a whole share, but... For your information, we did have a shiur scheduled at the end. I said there's so much to talk about when it comes to baking. You're going to hear from some very, very distinguished Rabbanim in part two, Rabbi Peretzky Shlita and Rabbi Rocco Shlita, and when it comes to HaFrash Eschala. I've just touched really the tip of the iceberg. And to teach you a little bit about the things, the sveikos that we have. We talk about the sveikos, to know when to ask the Shaila, but to have that clarity, and to be solution-oriented, and to have, Baruch Hashem, the Gedolei Torah that we have in our poskim, to go and to ask the Mishnah, no, we're going to get a solution, Rabbi Grossman. That's something that, Baruch Hashem, I'm very proud, I'm very excited about this industry. It's something which I'm thrilled to do, and I wish you all very much Hatzlacha in all your endeavors. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.